Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're a church in Gahanna, Ohio that exists to help people find and follow God. We hope this message encourages you, challenges you, and helps you discover how much God really loves you.
All right. Well, good morning, Three Creeks. My name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here. And as I was putting on my microphone this morning, one of Tammy Smith's hairs was connected here to the back. And so if I'm a little extra spicy today, you'll know why. I got the chance to be at another church last weekend. And while it is so awesome at times to be at other churches, it makes me miss my friends. And so I'm grateful to be back with you guys this morning. Our team is working pretty hard on something. This is unrelated to the message almost entirely, but our team's been working really hard on something. And I wanted to show it to you really quick. You know how like that feeling you have when you get a new haircut, you're like, I kind of want people to notice, like it looks pretty good. I'm excited about this. ThreeCreeksChurch.com is brand new, live, and updated. If you type in ThreeCreeksChurch.com on your phone, on your computer, whatever, we sort of have a new website. If you scroll down, you can see all the things that are coming up. One of the things on there, I don't know if you saw that, but in just 4 weeks, we've got our men's weekend. It is a camping trip. It is for men of the church, if you're interested. There's a coming up page again. If you want to sign up for stuff, if you want to know what's going on. And really, we built this whole site to be super friendly for anyone who might be interested in checking out church, maybe even for the first time. And so I hope that, man, if you have somebody that you're thinking of that you want to invite to church, if they go to threecreekschurch.com, there's all sorts of stuff there for them, questions that or answers to questions that they might have. So anyways, there you go. There's our new haircut. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Verses 9 through 11. You might be familiar with this, even if you don't spend a lot of time in church. And if you're not religious or you don't even believe the Bible, I have a hard time thinking that a lot of people disagree with this one. It says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. If two lie down together, they can keep warm. How will one keep warm alone? Man, we love, as human beings, we love a good friendship. Help me fill in the blanks with a couple of these. I need a little bit of participation from you here this morning. Finish it for me. Timon and... Yes. Tom Sawyer and Sherlock Holmes and Mario and Woody and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, Frodo Baggins and, yes, some Lord of the Rings fans in the house. We love a good friendship, man. Summer's over. We just took our kids to school this week for the first time. It was supposed to be Thursday. It ended up being Friday here in Gahanna. And man, on one hand, we're like, summer's over and that's sad and we love summer and the pool, whatever. On the other hand, we're like, see ya, you know, like back to the regular rhythms. But man, as I was driving away from Royal Manor Elementary School the other day with Morgan in the car, I just couldn't help as I watched them walk in to just a new world for them. I just couldn't help but pray, and I prayed, God, would you keep them safe? God, would you help them to learn whatever you want them to learn? And God, I beg you that you would give them great friends. I frankly cared less about which teacher they got. I cared more about whether or not there were certain people and friends that they have in their class, because as human beings, we know the value of friendship. Once again, this is from the Bible, but I don't even care if you believe the Bible. You can't disagree with this. Proverbs 13:20, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. In other words, the friends that we make have an immeasurable impact on who we become. So let me just cut to the chase. How are you doing with friendship? Do you have great friends? Do you know what a great friend is. And are you a great friend? This is not secular. This is very spiritual. Are you a great friend? Some of us have great friends. We're in a season of our life where we go, man, it's never been better as it relates to friends. And I praise the Lord for that. You are blessed if you would say, man, right now, I've got some friends. And a lot of us ache because we cannot raise our hands and say that that is true about us. We had friends, perhaps, but it doesn't feel like we have any right now. In 1990, 126 years ago, in our country, 3% of people in America said that they had no friends. 3%, it's not very many. Today, 58% of Americans say that they struggle daily with loneliness, that they lack real friends. What's ironic is that the fourth most popular website in our country tells me that I have 4,400 friends, that I'm more connected than ever. And yet tons of us battle isolation and loneliness. If you rewind 2 weeks and go back and listen to the sermon from a couple weeks ago, I believe that one of the enemy's schemes that is working the most in our country among Christians is this fake friendship thing that we're all doing. Some of us need some new friends. Some of our friends are fools. The companions that we are running with are not wise. And I'm just telling you how it is. Some of us think that we are great friends, but we are not. And some of us have been hurt so badly by people that we thought were friends that we have literally said, I don't want very many friends. I don't want to have any more friends. I don't want to meet anybody new because I'm good with what I've got. And some of us have even gotten to the point of buying a dog, man's best friend, because we don't want to deal with people. How are you doing with friendship? Do you have any great friends? Are you a great friend? Here's the question that we're answering today. What does the Bible say about friendship? I'll just cut to the chase. It tells us a lot about friendship. A lot. Friendship is a very big deal to God. When I think about the saddest people in the Bible, or people in the Bible that when they're at their worst, it is almost always tied to isolation and loneliness and feeling rejected by friends. When the person who's nicknamed the weeping prophet, his name is Jeremiah. He wrote all of Jeremiah and he wrote the book of Lamentations. And he just over and over recounts this feeling of isolation and I feel deserted and I feel like nobody has my back. He even writes down, I sit alone. I think about Job, who wrote the most depressing book in the Bible. He has a few guys that call themselves friends, but it turns out that they're terrible friends. One of the things that Job writes, he says, my brothers are far from me. My acquaintances are estranged from me. My relatives have failed me and my close friends have forgotten me. Even David, the man after God's own heart, who writes the Psalms, half of them feel like they're joyful songs of praise. The other half are Psalms of lament, where just David just pours it out, tells you how he really feels. He writes, my friends and companions stand far off. I feel alone. I feel abandoned. I don't have any friends. And yet, if you flip it, you go, man, you look at some of our favorite Bible heroes, and in the moments that they thrived the most, it's often because they had a friend that was there to cheer them on. You think about Moses, and you think about the way that Aaron was Moses' friend. You think about Naomi, who endures the death of her husband and her two sons, but her daughter-in-law and her friend, Ruth, stands by her. You think about Daniel and his buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Like, could Daniel have stood up underneath the political pressure without good friends? I don't know. You think about Paul. Paul gets a lot of the plaudits. He gets the fame. Oh, the guy that went around the world and planted churches everywhere in the New Testament. He has 15 guys named friends who traveled with him on those journeys. He never went alone. Timothy and Titus and Barnabas and Silas, all these guys that walked with Paul. And you think, even think about Jesus. I mean, Jesus Christ could have done everything that he did all by himself. But right out of the gate, he chooses 12 men, disciples who are following him. And it's interesting, as they're kind of going about these 3 years of Jesus, they often ask him, where do we stand exactly with you? Are we gonna sit with you in heaven? Who exactly are we in relation to you? And on the night that Jesus was betrayed, Jesus looked at his 12 disciples, and this is what he said to him. He said, I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I call you friends. I call you philos, is what it means in the Greek. Jesus is saying, you are my friends. You are my companions. I love you. You are my boys, in the JTIV. Man, Jesus doesn't stiff arm the imperfect disciples. He invites them into friendship with him, which is symbolic of what God did on the whole. When he looked down at everybody who's made all kinds of mistakes, who's very far, who cannot earn their place in God's family, and says, I will send Jesus to tell everybody that they can be my friends, that I will forgive their sins, and I'm not gonna call them subjects that I rule. I'm not gonna call them sinners who I keep far. I'm not gonna call them servants who just do what I need them to do. I'm gonna call them friends. Like, that's what God did in sending Jesus to the earth. Here's a theological, Tim Keller calls it a theological weirdness. And I agree, it's almost hard to wrap your mind around at first, but it's true. When God created the world in Genesis chapter 1 and 2, he created it to be perfect. Adam, Eve, the garden, perfection, unity, relationship, together. And in Genesis chapter 3, it all falls apart because of sin. Everything in Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2 is described as good. It is good, it is good, it is good. And then everything after Genesis chapter 3 is bad, 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 because of sin, because of disobedience, because Adam and Eve thought they'd be better gods than God. There's one thing in Genesis chapter 2 that we find that isn't good. Genesis 2:18, the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. It's not good. Before the fall, before sin, there's something that isn't good. Here's what it means. Adam was not lonely because he was imperfect. He was lonely because he was perfect. The ache for friends is the one ache that is not the result of sin. Let me say that again. The ache for friends is the one ache that is not the result of sin. Every other ache, the ache of hunger, the ache of guilt, the ache of shame, the ache of what does my life mean, all of the other aches are a result of sin, but not the ache for friends. Tim Keller puts it this way. God made us in such a way that we cannot even enjoy paradise without friends. Which means that if you're lonely and you're longing for friends, you are not dysfunctional, you are fine. You are lonely because you're not a tree. You are lonely because you're not a robot. You're lonely because you were built this way. And if you feel like you're alone and you don't have good friends, well, you're supposed to feel like you're missing something. This is an important point to make before I move on to what I want to share next, but you might not have many friends because of sin, right? Maybe the ways that you have treated people or the ways that you talk to people or flaws in your character, man, you might not have very many friends because of you, and that is because of sin. But the passion for, the longing for friends is not wrong at all. It's not the result of sin. I'm laying this foundation to try to help you understand and see what does the Bible say about friendship. Like if you Googled or went to some search engine and say, what does the Bible say about friendship? Or Bible or Google, tell me about the best friendship in the Bible. Give me an example of what it could look like in the Bible. I can't be sure what would come up, but I'll bet you that the friendship between two people would be at or near the top, and it's the friendship between Jonathan and David in the Old Testament. They're known in the Bible as being great friends to one another. A little background, Jonathan's dad, Saul, tall Saul, handsome Saul, gets to be appointed the first king of ancient Israel. This is about 1000 BC. And Paul's firstborn son is Jonathan. And so Jonathan is the rightful heir to the throne. He is going to be the next king of Israel. But Saul is a fool, and Saul is filled with pride. And God removes him from the throne and appoints David, who's the 7th-born son. He's just a shepherd boy, but he's a man after God's heart, to be the next king of Israel. So who did David replace? He didn't really replace Saul. I mean, he kind of did, but he really replaced Jonathan, who was the quote-unquote rightful heir to the throne. And the songs echoed through the hills of Israel that Saul had killed his thousands and David his tens of thousands. In other words, Saul's no good to us anymore. We want David. And now that fills Saul with envy and jealousy to the point where Saul wants to kill David. But if you think about it, Jonathan has every right to be just as angry, just as upset that someone's taking his place as the second king of Israel. You would think maybe Jonathan would be filled with envy as well, but no. In 1 Samuel 18, this is what it says when David met Jonathan. After David had finished talking with Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son. And there was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. Jonathan made a solemn pact with David because he loved him as he loved himself. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe, giving it to David, together with his tunic, sword, bow, and belt. So here are two men, both of them on track to be the next king of Israel. Jonathan had the most to lose because of David's success, but he gives his robe and he gives his armor to David. He says, "You will be the next king of Israel. These rightfully belong to you." David had a tough calling on his life to wield the power of Israel's kingship, but the calling on Jonathan's life may have been even more difficult, to yield the power of Israel's kingship to his friend. I wish I had a little bit more time today to dive a little deeper into their friendship, but here's what you need to know, is that Jonathan spent the rest of his life being a great, loyal friend to David. He saved David's life on numerous occasions. In David's worst moments, when David's back was against the wall, Jonathan would come in and remind David of his strength in God, not of his skill or not how savvy of a politician he was. No, no, no. He would remind David of how God had always taken care of him. Jonathan loved God. He loved God more than power. He loved God more than the throne. He loved David, or he loved God more than himself. And he loved God more than David, which actually enabled him to be the best friend that David ever had. Jonathan was Saul's firstborn son, right? I told you that. Do you know who David's son was that was going to be the third king of Israel, the rightful heir to David's throne? His name was Solomon. And Solomon, David's son, never met Jonathan, David's friend. Jonathan was killed before that could ever happen. We think of Solomon, if you've been around church and are familiar with some of the stories of the Bible, you might think of Solomon as some wise guy with a big beard and a pen writing Proverbs. But it's important to remember that at one point, Solomon was just 8 years old. Little Solomon. All he knew about his dad, about David, was that he was his dad. And I can't be sure that this happened, and but I just imagine that it could have, and that it did. That there were times, I mean, my 8-year-old, when I go in to put Judah to bed, a lot of times he just, this is just what kids do. They say, "Dad, can you tell me a story? Can you tell me a story about when you were growing up?" And I take that opportunity every once in a while to tell my son Judah, my 8-year-old, a story about when I was growing up. And often I will include stories about my friends. I'll tell them about Ryan and Kyle and Jeremy growing up in Bungalow. I'll tell them about Mason and Brian and Chris and Brandon and the funny things we did in high school. I'll tell them about Shay and Mitch and I'll tell them about people in college. And I want my 8-year-old to know about my friends, to know about friends that have been good to me as his dad. And I don't know if this happened for sure, but I'm just imagining that as Solomon, who's 8 years old, says, "Dad, can you tell me a story?" I just imagine that from time to time, David told a story about Jonathan. And he would have ended it by saying, "David, you would have loved Jonathan. He was the best friend that I've ever had." And so Solomon is picking up these pieces, and later in his life, he actually writes all the Proverbs. It says a lot about friendship in the Proverbs. And here's where I want to land the plane for us today. I want to give you 4 great marks of a great friendship. 4 marks of a great friendship straight from the Bible. Every great and spiritual friendship has these 4 attributes. You get to do a little bit of self-evaluation. How am I doing? You get to evaluate some of your great friendships. What's missing? And believe it or not, you're going to love this. They all start with C. This is perfect. They're easy to remember. Number 1, every great and spiritual friendship has the mark of consistency. It has the mark of consistency. Solomon writes in Proverbs 17:17 that a friend loves at all times. Not some of the time, not from time to time, at all times. Great friends aren't too busy to be great friends. Some of us have been living life so busy that we have not been able to be great friends. Tim Keller says, you can't be a great friend without availability, because the proverb says that a friend loves at all times. And Joel Traynor says, if you're too busy to be a great friend, you're too busy. If you're too busy to be a great friend, you're too busy. Great friends. Listen, man, I'm batting 500 on this, maybe. I want to be a great friend, but I miss the mark daily with the people that I say are my great friends. But great friends go to their friends' kids' sports games. And great friends go to their friends' parents' funerals. Great friends show up, man. Great friends are there. They're consistent. I have a great friend named Mark, and Mark runs his life very organized to the point where he has a reminder every Tuesday, call or text my friend Joel. And every week, in some way, shape, or form, he reaches out to me and says, how are you? Sometimes there's things to talk about. Sometimes there's nothing to talk about at all. But my friend Mark is consistent, and he loves me at all times. That is a mark of a great friendship. Number 2, comfort. An attribute of a great friendship is that the friends bring one another comfort. This one's from Ecclesiastes, and I already read it to you once, but I'll read it again. 2 are better than 1. They have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. You think there's any chance you're going to fall down at any point? You can't go buy a friend at Giant Eagle when you're in a pinch. Great friends are there to pick you up. Great friends bear one another's burdens. Great friends can't be happy when their friends are really sad. You're only as happy as your saddest friend. When I read this verse, I can't help but think of, I'm not a big movie guy, but Frodo at the bottom of Mount Doom, when he just has no strength left, his face is pale, and he's got to carry this ring to the top, and his friend Samwise Gamgee is just holding him there. And Samwise is trying to bring back thoughts of the Shire, and come on, Frodo, you can do it. And Frodo's like, I really seriously can't do it. What does Samwise Gamgee look at Frodo and say? Do you remember? He says, I can't carry the ring, but I can carry you. I can't do what you're being asked to do, but I can carry you. I have some dear friends who are a part of this church who a couple weeks ago walked through a miscarriage. And some of you know exactly how that feels, and you know that there really are no words. It's devastating. It's so painful. And I think that the courage for this couple to say, we are hurting, man, that takes some courage. And I commend them for that. And the beauty, what I saw happen around them is that they have spent time building friends. They are great friends. And they've spent a year plus here being intentional about building friendships. And they had a bunch of people who didn't just text them, I'm sorry. Who didn't just text them, hey, if there's anything I can do, let me know. They had great friends provide comfort for them. They had friends bringing them food. They had a friend loan them a car. They had some friends donate some money to cover some of the medical bills. They had great friends come around them and comfort them and lift them up because they had fallen. They sat with them. They cried with them. They prayed with them. The friends couldn't carry it, but the friends can carry them. I read this line from an old magazine in 1911, and I think we should all hear it in 2026. If a friend is hurting, don't annoy them by asking if there's anything you can do. Think up something appropriate and do it. That is some great advice. Think up something appropriate and do it. Number three, the third mark of a healthy friendship, a spiritual friendship, candor. Honesty, truthfulness. Proverbs 27:6, wounds from a friend can be trusted. An enemy multiplies kisses. Something that doesn't love you will just tell you everything you want to hear. But wounds from a friend can be trusted. If you get a haircut and it looks dumb, and you ask a friend, does this look dumb? And they say, yes, that is a good friend. That is a great friend. Do you have any friends who can tell you the truth? If they can't, you got to figure out why. Might be their issue. They're having a hard time being honest. Maybe they're hurt from a previous experience doing that with somebody else. It might be because you responded not so great last time. It might be because you haven't intentionally given a great friend license to speak truth into your life. Are you a truth teller to your friends? Can they count on you? Wounds from people who aren't friends usually don't land well. Be careful who you're speaking too much truth to. But if you have a friend, tell them the truth. Proverbs says that that sort of honesty is like a kiss on the lips. It's a gift. I have a friend named Michael. I've had some great friends, but nobody's been a better friend to me than Michael. In my life, I met Michael when I was 25, just got married, and man, what a gift Michael is. And a couple years ago, I just said, "Big Mike, man, I know, I have some blind spots, and if I knew what they were, they wouldn't be blind spots. So I need you as my friend to tell me what do you see in my life, man? How can I grow up a little bit in my faith, in my character? Will you tell me the truth?" And Michael is he's such a good friend. He says, "Joel, let's just look for a second at some of the fruit of the Spirit. Let's just look at the evidence of God's work in your life." And he was so kind. He was like, "Man, I see in you, Joel, like joy is a strength of yours, and you have some peace, and I can see that you mean well, and there's some goodness." But he said, "Joel, if I'm going to be honest with you, if I'm going to tell you the truth, God and your family and your friends would be very blessed if you grew in the fruit of the Spirit that is gentleness." You need to grow in gentleness. And I said, "You're such an idiot." No, I didn't. I was like, "Man, I thought I was acing all nine. I guess not." No, I just said, "Man, what a gift." It wounded me. I didn't love hearing that this was an area for me to grow in, but man, I have grown in gentleness, and partly due to Michael's willingness to go there with me. I praise the Lord for Michael and his candor and any friend that you have that has been honest with you, because it is a gift to those of us that want to grow. Michael is a great friend. Number four, the last one, the fourth mark, counsel. Proverbs 27:9 says, the heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense. You and I both know that life is full of questions that we don't feel totally confident answering on our own. Who should I draft with my first draft pick? Public school or homeschool? This job or that job? Keep working a job or stay home with the kids? Live near family or move somewhere for the advancement of my career? Get the kids involved in a lot of things or keep life simple? Advance my career or choose family flexibility? Get engaged or break it off? Big questions. Questions that we do not want to have to answer totally by ourselves. Do we need good friends to give us counsel? We do. I can remember being 28 or 9, I guess, and just sensing this calling in our lives, me and Morgan together, to start a new church. And I didn't dream this up. It really came like God really wanted us to do it, but I wasn't sure. I needed counsel. I wanted to take my time. And so I can remember writing down the list of 10 people that I would say are good friends. People that love God the most, and they also love me. And I said, can I get 30 minutes of your time to 10 people over the course of about 3 months? I said, I want to pitch something to you. I just want to tell you what's going on in my life, and I need you to tell me the truth. Please do not tell me what I want to hear. Tell me what you really think. And I can remember talking to Dave Featherland and Tim Meyer and 8 other great friends that know me and love me and want what's best for me. And 9 out of the 10 said, I see this in you. I see this as God, his call on your life. I give this the green light. And man, there were a lot of times in the first couple years where I wanted to be like, get me out of here. But in the back of my mind, I thought, man, my 9 friends that love me said green light. They said they could see it. They confirmed this call on my life. Great friends offer great counsel. Consistency, comfort, candor, and counsel, 4 marks of a great friendship. You read that, and I think everybody goes, love that. Where can I get one? How can I get one of those? How can I get a friend who will be consistent to me and comfort me and counsel me and tell me the truth, even though it hurts me, and I know that'd be good for me? How can I get one of those? How can we get a great friendship with these marks? How do we get a great friend? The simple, short answer is you become one. You become one. One of God's favorite ways to take care of us, you've heard me say this before, is to give us great friends. Our initial thought is, okay, when's God gonna give me some? But the better, deeper question is, who might God give me to? How can I become a great friend? Christian author Zig Ziglar wrote this before he died. If you go looking for a great friend, you will find they're very scarce. But if you go out to be a great friend, you'll find them everywhere. And so the response today is to go out and say, I will try to grow in my consistency as a friend. I won't just text them and say, how can I help? I will be a comforter as a friend. If somebody asks me to tell the truth, I will tell them the truth because they are my friend. If somebody asks me for advice, I will point them to the Bible and I will give them my thoughts as my counsel. I want to grow in my ability to be able to do that. I want to become a great friend. Friends, this is not, friendship is not shallow or unimportant or secular. It is spiritual, it is important, it is meaningful. And God designed us to have and be great friends. So how you doing? How you doing? Here are 3 things that I want to encourage you to consider saying to someone today. Here are three things I want to encourage you to say to somebody today. Here's the first one. These are powerful, powerful sentences. Number one, you just say to somebody, I want to be your friend. You don't say, I want you to be my friend. You say, I want to be your friend. And some of us go, ugh, I just hate always having to be the one who initiates. Great. Take it off of somebody else's plate. They're thinking the same thing. I want to be your friend. C.S. Lewis says that a friendship is born when two people meet and they both say, what? You two? I thought I was the only one. Be the person that says, I want to be your friend. Number two, if you are blessed and you have a great friend or a best friend, you should tell them today. You should say to them, you are my best friend. You are a great friend. You realize it's free to say that. And the impact it could have, man, this is kind of funny and part of my story, I guess, but when I was an elementary kid, I was like, I really wanted Jeremy to be my best friend, but Jeremy said Ryan was his best friend. And so I was like, oh man. And then I got to high school and I wanted Mason to be my best friend, but Mason was best friends with Brian. And then I was like, okay, fine, Chris, he'll be my best friend. And then Chris was best friends with Brandon. And they always told me that too, which kind of hurt my feelings, but that's okay. I was sort of the fifth wheel in my little gang or whatever. My senior year of college, I'm 22 years old. I'm sitting in the car, and my friend Shay was on the phone with somebody else, and he said to his friend, I'm sitting here with my best friend, Joel. And I was like, and he hung up and I said, Shay, did you just say that I was your best friend? He said, of course you are. You're the best friend I ever had. That was like 20 years ago. Still means a lot to me. Everybody loves being told that they're a good friend, that they're a best friend. It's free to give away. Do you have a best friend? Do you have somebody who's been such a good friend? Will you just today call them and tell them? Or after church, look at them in the eyes and say, you're a great friend. Could be a parent, could be a sibling, could be somebody that lives far away, could be a roommate, could be your wife, could be your husband. Maybe in your marriage, you kind of wish you would be friends again. Maybe you just look at your spouse this afternoon and say, you're a great friend. Here's number three. Consider saying this. I want to be a better friend to you. I've just been busy, man. I've had a lot going on. Busy, lazy, both of them maybe. I just haven't been a great friend to you. I want to be more consistent. I want to be there for you in all times. I want to comfort you. I want to counsel you. I haven't been a great friend, but I want to be. Don't go so far to say like, I'm going to be. Just say, I want to be. My desire would be to grow as your friend. Because two are better than one. They have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. Jesus, I thank you for my friends right here. What a gift. Holy smokes. They have been so good to me. I hope that I could be a good friend to them. Thank you. For those of us who have friends, we thank you. And for those of us that don't, we want some. We ache for them. We long for them. We treasure them. Now that we're not surrounded by 25 people our age at all points of our life, now that we're living as young adults or adults, we wish we could go back and treasure friendship like when we had it. But man, we just long for it. We ache for it. We ask for it. I pray that someone in this room who feels lonely right now, that you would connect them with another person in this room who feels lonely right now. That you would allow their stories to collide. that when they talk, when they're getting to know each other, that they would both just say, man, when is the other shoe going to drop? This is so good. This is too good. I pray that it would be too good to be true and true. We thank you for the friends that we have. We ask that you'd help us to be great friends to one another. Thank you for being our friend. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.